In Section 4, Clause 7 of the Ceasefire Agreement, the Monitoring and Coordination Committee can actually define the appropriate measures to call for accountability of the perpetrators of violations, especially any grave crimes or abuses. In the U.S., Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing last week, U.S. Undersecretary of State Victoria Nuland indicated that the U.S. State Department had a targeted sanctions package ready to impose on the spoilers of a ceasefire agreement. So there are punitive measures against the violators. She also indicated publicly on the record that the allies, specifically Saudi Arabians and the Emiratis, would be on board with the punitive measures and the sanctions framework itself.
Yes, but the agreement itself, the ceasefire agreement, does not name certain punitive measures to be taken against violators. Is that correct?
Well, what the ceasefire does allow for, and this is specifically called for in Section 4, Clause 7, of the agreement on a short-term ceasefire and humanitarian arrangements, which was signed on May 20th, it allows for a clause that where the Monitoring and Coordination Committee can define the appropriate measures to call for the accountability of the perpetrators. So it allows for those measures to be specified, but it doesn't specify in the actual document what those measures are.
Yes, and if we just step back a little bit, it's a short-term ceasefire that the parties agreed to on Saturday, which went into force Monday evening. Today is the first full day of the ceasefire. But then we have to remember it's not a peace agreement or even a show of willingness to stop the fighting. What does it mean for how we should understand this conflict?
Well, Nabil, this is a complicated and very complex conflict that is the result of the buildup of possibly 20 or 30 years of residual effects of the war crimes and atrocities committed throughout the regime of Omar al-Bashir in the last, 2 years or so by Generals Burhan and Hemeti. So there's a saying that if you want to eat an elephant, you have to slice it first. I mean, the short-term humanitarian ceasefire is the first step of three steps, and it's a critical one. So the first step is this humanitarian ceasefire to open safe corridors for food, medicine, to humanitarian workers to reach the 47 million Sudanese who are currently trapped in their homes without electricity or water. The second step is a sustained cessation of hostilities or a peace agreement, the same peace agreement that you're speaking about. And then the third step is a process to return us to a transition to democracy. So it's a three-pronged approach, if you will. And the second step, which is a peace agreement, if the ceasefire holds, requires more pressure from a broad international coalition of countries. We saw U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Molly Fee's visit to Addis Ababa on May 12th for meetings with the African Union, the IGAD, the UN Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa, and other African partners in order to bring them on board this coalition. So, I mean, I believe that the U.S. And Saudi Arabia, the UN, AU, and regional bodies are clear on how their national security interests and that of the international community are threatened by a potential failed state in Sudan. The dangerous implications of a spillover of the Sudan war into neighboring countries. And so it's in the interests of the international community and our neighbors to press for a peace agreement.